Hi, I'm an Eleanor from Hueytown, Alabama. My name's Bo Templin. Morning, y'all. It's good to be here. Good to be over in Georgia this weekend. I was just sitting there thinking, and that's dangerous. But it happens every once in a while. But Shirley and I, we're like Michael and like Keith that you'll hear tonight, and we do our share of traveling around and doing these kind of things and get to go different places and meet different folks. And what's neat about this weekend is it's good to be in a place where you know how to say y'all. So I'm going to tell you one of my secrets. See, when I go off somewhere, I don't have to worry about it over in Georgia, but when I go off somewhere, that's one of the first things I do is I get somebody in a conversation and try to get it around where they'll say y'all, and if they make a two-syllable word out of it, I know I'm in the wrong place. So it's neat to be here and know that hear y'all say y'all, and it's a one-syllable word, and you know what that is. And I know I'm at home. I know a bunch of y'all. This is close to speaking in my home group, and that's tough. And there's enough of you out there that know me and that know my sponsors, and that's another part of this thing. There's a bunch of y'all out there that know my sponsors. So once again, I'm not going to be able to give my out-of-town talk. I've got an out-of-town talk, and I'm just waiting on the chance to give it. It's going to be fun, but it's not anything like the truth. It's just going to be fun. But dadgummit, there's several of y'all that know my sponsors, and if I was to try that today, I'd sure enough be in trouble. I hope y'all got sponsors like I got. I got sponsors that come out of the old school, and we're going to talk about sponsorship some today, and my sponsors believe in doing things the old way, and that means they don't believe in flying it up, and they don't sugarcoat anything. They look me dead in the eye, and they tell me just like it is. They love me enough to be honest about me for me, and so I don't want to do anything to upset my sponsor. Well, last time that I really upset my sponsor, I was in Georgia. And I don't know if there's some of y'all in here maybe that have been to this Georgia Men's Roundup that they have twice a year east of Atlanta. And I was over at that thing. And what had happened is I went over on Friday and when my real live alcoholic packed my bag, well, she packed me a brand new shirt that she had bought me, and brand new dress shirt, and the doggone thing was packaged wrong. It was marked wrong. Wasn't her fault. And I got over and I got ready to speak, and I went in there to put my coat and tie on, my shirt and tie, and this shirt was made for a little fella. It was not made for me, and not only could I not get it around my neck, there was no way it was coming around my stomach. And it was the only dress shirt I had with me, so I couldn't wear a shirt and tie. And I had no, nothing else I could do. I put on an open collar shirt with a sport coat, and I went in there and I talked. Now, I'm in an all-men's retreat. Now, one of my primary sponsor, my Al-Anon sponsor, is female. And I speak at Friday night in an all-men's workshop 200 miles from home. And when I get home Sunday, there's a message for me to call Fran, and I call her, and she says, I want to know why you were speaking without a coat and tie on. So my sponsors are powerful. They can see and they can hear, and I don't want to do anything to upset. and I ain't going to give you my out-of-town talk. We're going to talk some Al-Anon, and my wife's going to speak Sunday morning, and she's going to get rebuttal anyhow. And so not only am I going to give you my real talk, it's going to be the nice version of it, where her part is concerned. I'm going to tell you my story, I promise you that. I'm going to tell you about me. But in order to do that, it's necessary just a couple of times in there that I mention her. And I try not to mention her any more than I have to, because I want to tell you my story. But there's a couple of times in there that I just have to mention her. And so in case y'all don't know her, I want y'all to know who I'm talking about. So Shirley, would you stand up? This is my real live alcoholic. Now, she'll give you her version of this thing Sunday morning. I promise you it'll be worth the trip back, because it is different. Michael said disease of perception. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a totally different story. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be at the party. That's what this is, you know. This is a party. These conventions and these roundups that we have, they're celebrations of recovery. That's what they are. This is a weekend celebration. And Shirley and I learned early on that we like the party side of this thing. Because, see, she got out of treatment on Saturday of Labor Day weekend, 1982. And I picked her up from that treatment center at noon on Saturday, and they told her she had to be in an AA meeting in 12 hours. And so a few hours later, we was 50 miles south of Birmingham in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, at their Al-Anon AA anniversary. And we walked in a room down there. It was held on the campus of the university at that time. And we walked in a room down there, and there was 500 of y'all. They have a big, big anniversary. And there was 500 of y'all waiting on us. And you was laughing, and you was hugging, and you was dressed up, and you was cleaned up, and you was smelling good, and you was having a good time, and nobody was arguing, and nobody was fighting. And we heard an Al-Anon talk, and then you fed us a good barbecue supper, and then we heard a good AA talk, and that was our introduction to this way of life. Was at the party. And we decided right away that we liked the parties. And we've been going to the parties ever since. And I hope that you understand and you realize that that's what this weekend is. You know, this weekend is a place to let your hair down, feel safe, be comfortable, and just relax and have a good time. And I'm glad you invited me and Shirley and allowed us to be a part of it, because we like the parties. Now, I told you I was going to talk some Al-Anon, I was going to tell you about me, and I'm going to do that. But first, I want to take just a minute, and I want to talk to the members of Alcoholics Anonymous that are sitting in this room for just a minute before I talk Al-Anon. And if you're sitting in this room this morning and you are a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to talk to you for just a minute. And here's what I want to say to you. I want to say thank you. I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to thank you for a couple of reasons. Number one, I want to thank you for having AA there 14 years ago when my gal reached out her hand. Because you see, I'd lost her. The bottle had her, booze had her, and I couldn't do anything about that. And I was driving myself crazy trying to find a way to get her sober and keep her sober, and I couldn't find it. And when she had that moment of clarity that all recovering people seem to have, and she reached out her hand, then the hand of AA was there. And you took her in. And you put your arms around her and you loved her back to health and you taught her how to live sober. And you see, at that point in our lives, we were 18 and a half years into a marriage that wasn't going to make it to number 19. And we knew that. And because AA was there, and because you took her in and you taught her how to live sober, And as a result of that, me getting involved in something called Al-Anon, and two kids being introduced to something called Alateen, we were able to put this family back together. And this past April, we celebrated anniversary number 32. And you see, we couldn't have done that if it hadn't have been for you. Alcoholics Anonymous made that possible. I also want to thank AA for another reason. I want to thank you for knowing from the get-go that this thing called alcoholism is a family disease. Now, you see, I know that you knew it from the beginning because I'm one of those Al-Anons that believes in reading and studying the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used to whisper that, and I don't whisper that anymore. I believe that we need to study the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous and find out where our program came from. It's where the steps are explained in their original version. But it's also there in your book, in the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous, in the 8th and 9th chapters, that I learned that you knew from the very beginning that this thing was a family disease. And if you get back and study the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, as my sponsors have encouraged me to do, you find that some of the very first meetings were family meetings, where the whole family went together. And I just want to say thank you for including us in this recovery from the very beginning. And I want to thank you for loving us enough that some 16 years after AA was born, when it was time for Al-Anon to be born, and we stepped up and we said, can we have your 12 steps? You loved us enough that you said, you bet you can, Bo. And what we want you to do, Bo, is we want you to come in these rooms and we want you to learn how to implement these 12 steps in your life on a daily basis. And we want you to learn how to be happy, joyous, and free, and to not be dependent on what another person does or does not do. And for that, I am eternally grateful today, and I say thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I introduced myself to you, I told you that I was from Hueytown, Alabama, and I am. But my home group is in Bessemer, Alabama. Now, that's just 5 miles over there. It's just across the creek. There's an Al-Anon group in Hueytown, Alabama. Both those groups, the one in Hueytown and the one in Bessemer, lay claims on me. The one in Hueytown claims I belong to Bessemer. And there's times my home group might take I belong out there in Hueytown. But I not only told you where I was from, I told you what I was, and I want to talk about that for just a minute. Because, you see, I introduced myself to you as an Al-Anon. When I got here 14 years ago, I thought being married to my real live alcoholic made me an Al-Anon. And what I've learned in the past 14 years is that being married to my alcoholic qualifies me for Al-Anon. It does not make me an Al-Anon. And there's several things that I do in my life today in order to be able to tell you this morning that I'm a member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. And I want to share three or four of those things with you. The first thing that I have to do in order to tell you I'm an Al-Anon is I got to go to some meetings. And, you know, you say, well, sure, Bo, that's understood. Yeah. No, it's not understood. We got a world full of people out there claiming to be part of our fellowship today, AA and Al-Anon, and you never see them in a meeting. So the first thing I got to do in order to tell you I'm a member of this thing is I got to suit up, show up, and occupy that chair in an Al-Anon meeting. Now, I know that this is a program of action. I know that you can't get it by osmosis. I know because I tried. The first 7 months that I was around this thing, I occupied your chairs and your meetings, and I tried to get it from you. I tried for it to rub off on me, and it just wouldn't do it. Nothing happened until I started taking action. But I also know today that it was in those early days, sitting in there occupying that chair, watching you winners, watching you old-timers that were there for me, the people that had cleared the path for me. It was sitting in those chairs watching you folks that I began to get an idea of the things that I was going to have to do and the changes that I was going to have to make in order to be successful in this way of life. So the first thing I got to do is I got to go to some meetings. The second thing I have to do, and then remember, this is just for me, this is my story, is I have to have a home group. Now, when I got here, I didn't need a home group. When I got here, I didn't need Al-Anon. Because, you see, I came here for all the wrong reasons. I came here to make sure she was in that other room. That treatment center she went through told her she had to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and we did. Now, if you're in Al-Anon, you understand that. But I wasn't going for me. I was going to make sure that Shirley was in her meeting. Because, see, my new job in life now was to keep her sober and to make sure that nothing upset her and to make sure that everything went all right and make sure she did everything she was supposed to do in order to stay sober. And one of those things was go to her meetings. So if it was an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I went with her. And I sat right beside her, and I was very quick to use that elbow when something important was said. And I listened to you guys and gals real close so that on the way home I could repeat to her the important things that she might have missed. You know, yeah. But occasionally we would show up and it would be a closed meeting. And you AAs wouldn't let me stay in there. And so I would go in the other room then into the Al-Anon meeting. And I want to tell you this. This is real, real important. I hope your home group is like my home group. I walked in the doors of that Al-Anon group in Bessemer, Alabama, and I told them going in the door, I don't need to be here. I don't need you. I don't need your meeting. There's nothing wrong with me. If she don't drink, we'll be all right. And I'm only here to make sure she's in her meeting where she won't drink. And do you know what the gals in Bessemer did? They throwed their arms open and said, come on in, Bo. Come on in. Yeah. Let me tell you something. It scares me today. Some of the things I'm seeing in Al-Anon where we're trying to decide whether you belong or not. It's scary stuff. If they had tried to decide for me, they would have told me I couldn't come. Because, you see, I came for all the wrong reasons. And I didn't hide them from you. I told you on the way in the door that I didn't need your meetings and I didn't need your steps and I didn't need your program. There was nothing wrong with me. And the only reason I was there is because they wouldn't let me stay in that other meeting. And you love me enough. You just threw your arms open. You said, come on in, Bo. And then you said things like, Bo, we know you don't want to be here. So right inside the door, Bo, we've got a chair. You don't have to come all the way in the room. And you can sit, and that'll be your chair, Bo, and we won't let anybody else have that chair. And you just come right on in, and you sit down in that chair. And you begin to very gently put your hooks in me, and you begin to very gently pull me into this thing without even letting me know it. And you began to hook me in a lot of different ways. Number one, you began to hook me with your laughter. Think back to the early meetings you went to. Remember the laughter? Boy, been a long time since there'd been any laughter in my life. And I remember the laughter, and I loved it. I remember the very first meeting that I went to there in Bessemer. And it was a speaker meeting, and one of the gals that had been a member of Bessemer Al-Anon for years was speaking that night, and she got up and she introduced herself. She said, hi, my name's Doris, and it's been 14 years since I had to plan a murder. And the room was just like this. Everybody just laughed, except me. I said, my God. Because, see, I'd been planning a murder. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to kill her and tell God she died. Yeah. And here they were laughing at her about it. And I said, man, these people, maybe they do know. Maybe they do know. Then you begin to hook me with your hugs. Whether I wanted you to hug me or not, you came up there and you made those hugs available to me. It's been a long time since there's been any hugging going on in my life. Then you began to hug me with that unconditional love because, you see, you didn't even try to change me. You didn't even try to make me say this or make me say that. What you said to me was, Bo, we are an Al-Anon group that believes in living within the traditions of Al-Anon. And we've been here since 1961 helping folks that have been affected by the disease of alcoholism. And we want you to come on in this room, and we're going to give you some real strong, pure Al-Anon. And then you make the decision about whether you belong or not. We'll let you make that decision. And you put your arms around me and you hug me. And then every night that I went to an Al-Anon meeting in Bessemer, before I left, on my way out the door, and remember, I wasn't far inside the door, but you would catch me before I got away. You made it a point. I know today you assigned somebody to me. Tonight's your night. Catch him. And what you would say to me was, Bo, please come back. We need you. God, I needed that because I hadn't been needed in a long time. And if you needed me, I'd try to make an effort to come back and help you. And you began to do these things, and you began to very gently pull me into this. But you see, I sat in that room, and I occupied that chair and space in your meetings for 7 months. And I didn't get involved in your recovery. I was exposed to it. You made sure of that. You made sure that I knew the basics. You made sure that I knew what I was going to have to do, should I ever make the decision to do it. But I just sat in there and got sicker and sicker and sicker because I kept telling you there was nothing wrong with me. The bottom line is that I was not experiencing any kind of spiritual growth because I wasn't making any changes. And it took 7 months of just getting sicker and sicker and sicker for me to finally get to the point that I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And it was only then that I made Bessemer my home group, got me a sponsor, got involved in some steps, and began to experience any kind of spiritual growth in this way of life. But here lately, a home group's becoming real important to me for another reason. You see, I've been in Al-Anon long enough that some of the good things have begun to happen to me. Some of the rewards have begun to come my way. And along with those good things and those rewards comes something called responsibility. And it's there in my home group in Bessemer, Alabama, that I do my best to fulfill my responsibility to Al-Anon. Because you see, it's there in my home group that I make sure that I show up early, prepared to stay late. You know why I show up early and I'm prepared to stay late? It's because that's the way I was sponsored. I told you, my sponsors come out of the old school. And my sponsors taught me to do that. That's how I was sponsored in this. That's how I was raised in this program. You show up early, Bo, and you're prepared to stay as long as it takes. I don't know where this thing came about, our meetings. I don't know. I know that there's a Saturday night couples meeting that we used to have in Bessemer. Open discussion. And it had to come out of the 8th and 9th chapters in the big book to the wives and the family afterwards. And there are many, many, many nights that me and Shirley went to that meeting, and it started at 8 o'clock. And at 12 and 12:30 and 1 o'clock in the morning, we were still there because there was folks still there, and we was helping each other, and we was getting help. And good things was happening. I know there's many nights that I showed up at that meeting, and I sat at one end of the meeting, and I looked across the table, and I told Ted what I needed Shirley to hear. And Shirley sat down at the other end of the table, and she told Michael what she needed me to hear. And many, many times those meetings, we drove different cars to those meetings, but we could get in the same car, and we could drive home and go back Sunday and get the other car. Yeah. So I show up early, and I'm prepared to stay as long as it takes. is there in my home group that I take my turn, chairing meetings, fulfilling the offices, making the coffee, putting the literature out, doing whatever is necessary to make sure my meeting goes on. It's there in my home group that I take my turn making sure that I'm standing at the door greeting the newcomers that are coming in, and that the hand of Al-Anon is extended just to them, just like it was to me 14 years ago. It's there in my home group that I participate financially, and that's part of our recovery too. But most importantly, it's there in my home group that I make sure that I'm there on group conscious nights and on business meeting nights so that I can have my vote and my say in making sure that my group stays within the traditions of Al-Anon. So that 14 weeks, 14 months, 14 years from now, Al-Anon's still going to be in Bessemer, Alabama, in as strong and as pure a form as it was 14 years ago when I got there. How about you? Are you fulfilling your responsibility in your home group? Think about what I've said. Where are we going to be if we don't take hold and we don't start fulfilling this responsibility? I'm going to tell you how far we've gone with it in Bessemer, and then I'll get off of that. We've gotten to the point in Bessemer in the Wednesday night discussion meeting that if you're floundering around and you hadn't got a sponsor and you're afraid to ask one, we'll get you one. Yeah, we'll get you one. We'll assign you one. And we just did that not too long ago with a gal. She came up to me and she said, came up to me one Wednesday night and she said, I was looking at two women in there and I can't decide which one of them you think would make the best sponsor for me. And I said, I think either one of them would make a great sponsor for you. And she said, well, okay, let me think. And she came back a few minutes later and she said, would you introduce me to them? And I said, yeah. I said, you've been sitting in meetings with them? She said, yeah, but I'd rather you introduce me. And I know today, because she admitted this to me, she waited till she knew both of them were gone before she asked me to introduce her to them. Yeah, she did that. She was that full of fear. Well, to just go up and talk to these gals. And I looked at her after we found out they were both gone, and I said, you really want to get a sponsor and get in the steps, don't you? And she said, yeah. I said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I said, I'm going to do something for you that they used to do way back in the old days. And she said, what's that? I said, I'm going to get you a sponsor. And I'm going to get you a sponsor that's going to put you in the steps. And I said, next Wednesday night, you meet me here and I'll have you a sponsor. That's fun stuff. And I went and talked to this gal that I knew would make a great sponsor for her, and I knew would put her in the steps. I knew, that was the only thing I knew about her, was that she would put her in the steps. She would take her through the steps. Showed up back there next Wednesday night, and I had this one over here that was said, yeah, I'd love to sponsor her. I had this one over here that was looking for a sponsor. I brought them both together, and she looked at her, and she said, you're the one I really wanted anyhow. And Cece, my daughter, has been sponsoring her ever since. And they're working the steps. Working the steps. Just neat stuff, neat stuff. It's a home group. Home group, that's where I was with that. But it also leads me into the next thing for me, you see. In order for me to tell you I'm an Al-Anon's, I got to have that sponsor, too. I got to have that sponsor. And I'm going to tell you something. When it got time for me to pick a sponsor in Bessemer, there were no other male Al-Anon's. And so I picked a female to be my sponsor. And let me tell you about my female sponsor. She's old enough to be my mama. And she treats me like her son. And sometimes, I mean, she treats me like a mother would treat a son. When I need discipline, I get it. She's a retired school teacher. And there's a side to her that I didn't know existed till I asked her to be my sponsor. She came into Al-Anon in 1961. And she has been active in service just about ever since she's been here. She's a past delegate. And she has raised me in service. About 6 months into this relationship, we both agreed that I needed a man to talk to a man about some things. And my sponsor was wise enough to look at me and say, Bo, go out there in the AA room and get you a male AA that you can talk to. And I just happened to pick the one that she'd been married to about 42 years at that time. And Jim and Fran have been my sponsors. They've been my mentors and my guides. And so I'm so fortunate in that I get both sides of it. You see, I've got a female Al-Anon sponsor and I got a male AA sponsor. And so I get both sides of this thing on a real, real regular basis. And like I say, they're old-timers. They believe in doing it the old way. They don't believe in sugarcoating it. And I hope that you have that kind of sponsor. I'll tell you just how much my sponsor cares about me. About 2 months ago, I had surgery. 6 weeks, 2 months ago, something like that. I had some surgery. And I had surgery on Tuesday morning, and I was laying in the hospital room on Wednesday morning. And Fran's getting on up in the years now. Fran's 70 or better now, and they live way across town now. They sold their house in Busper and bought them a garden home, and it's 25 or 30 miles away. And on Wednesday morning, after I've had surgery on Tuesday morning, and I'm laying there in the hospital bed, my sponsor walks in the room, and I said, to myself, I said, boy, aren't you fortunate to have a sponsor that it's not real easy for her to get in the car and drive this distance, but she loves you and she cares about you enough that she got in the car and she came over here to check on you and see about you. And my sponsor had not been in the room 30 seconds till I knew that my thinking once again was wrong. She wasn't there to see about my surgery. She had already talked to Shirley the night before and knew about that. She was there because she had got some information that I was fixing to do something that I shouldn't do. This was like Wednesday morning, and somebody had told her that I was catching an airplane Friday morning to go to Los Angeles and speak in a conference. And I'm laying in a hospital bed. And she wasn't there about my surgery. She was there to tell me I wasn't going to L.A. And how egotistical that was, and how selfish and self-centered it was, and how that conference was going to go on whether I was there or not. And once I realized what it was, I said, hold on a minute. Everyone who told you this gave you bad information. They missed it by a week. It's Friday week that I'm going. And she said, oh. Well, then I'll come back next Wednesday, and if you're not doing any better, we'll have this same talk. But you know what was neat? She still loves me enough that she would come in and walk in that room, and she would confront me. And she would be objective about me for me, and that's what I need her to do. And I just hope that if you don't have that kind of sponsor, that you look around and see if you can find that kind of sponsor. And if you're looking for a sponsor, try to find that kind. Let me tell you two questions that you can ask if you're looking for a sponsor that'll help you find that kind of sponsor. The first thing that I would ask anybody that I was considering being my sponsor is I would ask them, do you have a sponsor? Because I don't know how you're going to sponsor me if you've never been sponsored. Okay? And the second question, if they said yes to that, then I'd say, have you worked the steps? And if they have sponsored and they've worked the step, then you might be on the right track. Off and running. So I hope you get you a sponsor, and I hope you do this thing the way it needs to be done. And the last thing I do in order to tell you I'm an Al-Anon so I can get on with this thing is I have to take those 12 simple steps that we read. 12 simple steps for a very complicated person. And to the best of my ability, I got to incorporate them in my life on a daily basis. Getting up every morning, suiting up, showing up, prayer, meditation, talking with God, and going out there, getting on the firing line and putting this thing into action. Being the best bow I can be today. Some days I do pretty good with that. You know, around things like this, surrounded by folks like you, this is the easy place to work the program, isn't it? Yeah. This is the easy place. The real proof of this thing's out yonder. How do I do out there? And I'm going to tell you this morning that some days I just don't do worth a flip out there. Some days I don't. But what I'm beginning to realize is that it's not important how good I do or I don't do. The important thing is, am I on the firing line? Am I putting it into action? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing out there? And if I'm in action and I'm on the firing line, then it'll turn out okay. It'll turn out all right. So these are some of the things that I do today in order to tell you I'm an Al-Anon. Now, I don't know how I got off on some of those tangents that I got off on this morning, but I'm going to run way out of time here, so I'm going to have to cut some stuff out, and we're going to get the short version of this drunkalogue. And the short version of this drunkalogue is to tell you a little bit about me. Is that I was born in 52 years ago into a very strict, very religious Southern Baptist home. And I was raised in a very strict, very religious Southern Baptist home right there outside of Hueytown, Alabama. And I was taken to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night on a real regular basis. And the reason I start there is because it's that what's important about that time in my life up through my late teens is that it was in that Southern Baptist church that I formed a concept of God that I was going to bring into adulthood that was going to cause me some problems. Now, I know that in that church they talked about God being loving and God being forgiving. I know that. But I didn't choose to bring that with me. What I brought with me was God will get you. And I had God sitting up there in that great white throne, and he had that big scoreboard, and every time Bo did something bad, there was a big X went up there, and there was a price to be paid. And you see, several years down the road, when the disease of alcoholism was in our home and it got as bad as it had to get, see, I never stopped praying, but my prayers changed. And my prayers became why me prayers. And how could you do this to me? And how much more are you going to put on me, God? Because I looked on Shirley's drinking as a punishment to me for something that I had done. And that specific something that I had done is that I had given her the first drink of alcohol that she ever had in her life. And when things started getting bad, Shirley would point her finger at me and say, if you had never given me that drink, I wouldn't be the way I am today. Well, see, I didn't know anything about the disease of alcoholism. And I agreed with her. And I took on a load of guilt that was to get heavier and heavier as long as the drinking continued, and to get heavier and heavier until I found the doors of Al-Anon. Because it was in Al-Anon that I learned to shed that guilt. And it was in Al-Anon I learned that way back there years ago, when I gave my wife that drink, I introduced her to alcohol, not alcoholism. And I am not responsible for her having the disease of alcoholism. Now, what I've learned the last 14 years in Al-Anon is, since I'm not responsible for her having the disease, I can quit trying to be responsible for her recovery. And I can turn her loose and let her go, and I can put the emphasis on me and begin to make changes in my life. And that's what Al-Anon has taught me to do. But I was raised in this real strict home, and I wasn't around any drinking. I didn't know anything about drinking, and the deal is I didn't drink. And I met Shirley, and we started dating, and as she will tell you, she didn't drink either, but she for different reasons. She comes from that broken alcoholic home. But the deal is, she didn't drink. So I didn't drink, she didn't drink, we met and started dating, and we didn't drink. And we dated for 5 years, and then we finally decided we could get along, and we got married. And we set out on this thing called a Great American Dream. 2 kids just madly in love, ready to tackle the world. And our Great American Dream centered around something called a dollar bill. And what we knew about life was that successful people had lots of nice stuff. Made lots of money, bought lots of nice stuff. And our goal in life, because this is all we knew about life, our goal in life was to work hard, make lots of money, have nicer stuff than you did, and we would be thought well of in the community. That was our goal in life. And we became real good at it. Shirley had a good job. I had a good job. It took us about a year. We saved up enough money for that down payment on that first home out there in Hueytown, and we got that, and we were off and running. 3.5 years after we were married, God gave us the most beautiful blonde-headed, blue-eyed baby boy that a daddy could ever want. And Mike became a part of the Great American Dream. 17 months later, along came Sissy. Just as pretty, just as healthy, brown-eyed as she could be. And Sissy became a part of the Great American Dream. And we sat down and took stock, and we had 2 kids, and we had 2 cars, and we had 2 jobs, and we had a house, and everything we had was mortgaged to the hilt, and we was happy living the Great American Dream. And then, as Shirley will share with you, the deal came along where we had a sorority dance, a sorority that she belonged to. I handed her the first drink that she ever had. And alcohol became a part of our lives. And then it wasn't too far down the road that her disease of alcoholism manifested itself in her, and things began to get really, really bad. And I began to try to fix her and try to change her, because you see, I'm the husband, and I'm the father, and I'm the head of the family, and I'm supposed to fix anything that comes along. And I could fix the things that happened as a result of it. I just couldn't fix her. And my life had become one that was based on fear and anger and resentment, and that guilt was just getting heavier and heavier and heavier. And the shame and the embarrassment. But I had become a perfectionist with that fixed smile, that false smile that we all had. And I walked around all the time with that smile on my face, telling you I was fine, thank you. I was fine. Because, see, we had that great unwritten rule that every alcoholic home has. And that great unwritten rule is, nobody talks about it. And what you did at our house was, right before you hit that front door, you stopped and you straightened up and you made sure everything was in place, including your smile. And when you hit the road out there, you told the world that we were fine, thank you. We were fine. And this is the way we were living our lives in July of 1982. When the kids and I were going to a ball game, softball game one night, and as we were going out the door, Mike, who was 15 at that time, turned and looked at his mom and said, Mom, when we get home tonight, you're going to be passed out on the couch, or you're going to be passed out in bed. Where are you going to be passed out? And as Shirley will share with you, for the very first time in Mike's life, she wanted to slap his teeth out. She wanted to do harm to him. You see, she had been the recipient of some of that physical violence in the alcoholic home she was raised in. And she had made a deal with God that she would never lay a hand on one of her children. And here she was wanting to do physical harm to her child, and she couldn't deny that it had something to do with alcohol. And Mike didn't wait for an answer. He got in the car, and we left, and we went to the ball game. When we got home that night, we knew something was different, Because when we pulled in the driveway, Shirley was up. And the front door was open. She wasn't passed out. And it was well past her passing out time. And she was waiting on us. And when we came in, she met us at the door, and she looked at me, and she said, "Bo, I've called a treatment center. I'm going into treatment. I got to do something about my drinking." And I looked at her, and I said, "Shirley, this is number 1,382. What's different this time?" And I told her I didn't believe her, and I went to bed. And it wasn't until the next day when this treatment center called me for insurance information that I even believed that my wife had called. Now, let me share this with you. God was taking care of us right then, and we would have told you that God would have nothing to do with us. Because God directed us to a treatment center that believes wholeheartedly in treating alcoholism as a family disease, believes wholeheartedly in the 12-step programs of AA, Al-Anon, and Alateen. And not all the treatment centers in our area at that time treated it that way, and we didn't know the difference. God sent us where we needed to be for a few short days just so we could get ready and turn the corner and walk in the door into your arms where we've been ever since. Now, I wish you could have seen us that day we took Shirley off to treatment. It was July, late July, 1982. Alabama, just like it is here in Georgia, it was hot. I had a pickup truck. The kids put two lawn chairs in the back of the pickup. Had them a cooler of Pepsi back there. Had them a big blaster radio. Me and Mama up front, off to treatment we go. You'd have thought we was headed to the beach. We're going to go up there, check her in. 28 days later, she'll be fixed, and we're going about the great American dream. Everything will be all right. We get up there, and I get busy checking her in and get all the paperwork done, and they tell us, "Well, okay, you got her admitted now, you can go." And then this counselor stops us right before we go out the door, and he says, "Just want to let you know, we have something up here called Family Week. So I'm going to write you a letter and tell you all about it. Just wanted to make you aware that we're going to want you and both kids," because the kids were 13 and 15. "Want you and both kids to come up, move in on Monday, stay till Friday, be a part of Family Week." We get in the car, or they're in the truck, and the kids are up front with me going back home. The kids say, "Dad, we don't know about this thing called Family Week." Because, see, they were out of school for summer vacation. They said, "Dad, we don't know about going up there for a week. Because, Dad, while you was checking Mom in, we checked this place out." And the first thing, you know, I said, "Dad, they don't have a swimming pool." And they said, "Dad," and then Sissy said, "Dad," said, "they don't have a Coke machine up there. All they got is fruit juices." And then Mike says, "Dad, I know we wasn't supposed to, but we sneaked a look in one of the rooms. Dad, they don't have TVs in the room." And I told him, I said, "Kids, don't worry about that. No, we're not going up there for Family Week. There's nothing wrong with us. That guy, that's just his job to try to sell us on that. I was just being nice to him. We ain't going." Well, about a week later, I get the letter, and there's a statement in that letter that literally jumped off the page at me, and that statement was, "We want you to come up here and learn how to live with your alcoholic." Now, that made sense. So I called the kids in. I said, "Look here, kids, we might better think about going." And I showed them the letter, and I showed them that statement. I said, "We better go up there, because we already know there's certain things she can't drink. Now, there's probably certain foods, spicy foods, stuff like that, that she don't need to eat. There's going to be certain TV programs that she don't need to watch. The magazines, we're going to have to go through the magazine. Somebody's going to have to go through the newspaper every day. And this is what they're going to teach us up there. They're going to teach us how to keep her sober." And we took a little family inventory. Now, we didn't know that's what it was, but here's what we came up with. Remember, this was 14 years ago. We had darn good insurance that was going to pay for it all, so it wasn't a matter of money. The kids were out of school for summer vacation, so they were available. I was like any good untreated Al-Anon. I had 6 years of unused vacation time available. So I was available. And there was no reason to not go, so off to Family Week we went. Now, they call it Family Week. I call it Hell Week. Because that's what it was. We had not been on the property 5 minutes till I had my first little discussion. And what it was about is that there was going to be 18 of us family members up there representing 6 different patients. So there was 15 other people up there that I had never seen before in my life, didn't know them. And we were all going to be living down here in this wing together. And they sent us down to this wing, and they said, Sissy, I want you down at this end of the hall in the room with Miss So-and-so, somebody I'd never heard of. Mike, I want you up at this end of the hall in the room with Mr. So-and-so. And I looked at this lady, and I said, hold on just a minute. You're putting my 2 teenage children in a room for a week with folks that I know nothing about, don't even know who they are. And I'm not so sure that I approve of that. And she looked at me with a big smile on her face, and she said, Mr. Templin, it's not necessary that you approve of it. She said, you've got 15 minutes to be in this room, unpacked, and upstairs in the group room for orientation. Well, you know where I was 15 minutes later? Upstairs. Orientation. Now, maybe you can help me with this. I ain't figured this out in 14 years. There was 18 of us in that room, chairs in a big old circle. And here's the part that I ain't figured out. There was 18 of us in that room, and that counselor started with me. I ain't figured that out yet. And 2 minutes later, I was standing up and I was pointing my finger and I was literally hollering at him across the room. And you know why? Because he asked me something about me. And I told him that was none of his business. We weren't there about me. We was there about her. And I'd be glad to help him in any way I could with her. And I'd be glad to fill in any of the blank spots, be glad to tell him anything they needed to know about her. And he looked at me with that big smile, and he said, no, Bo, you misunderstand. He said, this week is about you. And it's about you learning how you have been affected by the disease of alcoholism and where you can go to do something about it. And I looked at him, and I said, if this week is about me, then you lied to me in your letter. And he just looked at me with a big old grin. He said, yeah, Bo, I lied to you. But thank God he did. Because, see, I wouldn't have gone. I wouldn't have gone. I'd have missed it. Let me tell you, a couple of things that happened up there that are real important. First thing that happened up there is that they told me that my wife has a disease called alcoholism. And since she has a disease called alcoholism, there's 3 C's that I needed to learn about. And the 3 C's being that I didn't cause it, I can't control it, and I can't cure it. I don't know where they got that, but I read it in some of our Al-Anon literature, so I think maybe that might be where they got it. I knew I couldn't control it, and I knew I couldn't cure it. I had darn near killed myself trying. What I needed to hear was I didn't cause it. Because, you see, I took that load of guilt up there to the treatment center with me. And as I told you earlier, what I learned up there is that when I gave my wife that drink, I introduced her to alcohol, not alcoholism. And it was when I began to learn that my wife had a disease that I could begin to shed that load of guilt that I had carried all those years. The next thing that happened up there is that they had a lady come up there and hold a real live Al-Anon meeting for us. And she had a captive audience because we was required to go. There was 18 of us in that Al-Anon meeting that night. And I have vivid memories of that meeting. And I don't know, this is my vivid memories of the meeting. I don't know what she did with the other 17 people in that room. Because I remember that meeting, and I remember her pointing her finger and saying, "Bo." She talked directly to me. But you see, she was out of the old school. God has continued since the very beginning to fill my life with people that know how to do this thing called recovery the old style way. The tried, tested, proven way. And she came out of that old school. And she looked at me and she said things like, "Bo, when Shirley gets out of this treatment center, if she's going to stay sober, she's going to go to AA." And I said, she said, "There's no end to it." She said, "That's it. The people that stay sober are the ones that go to Alcoholics Anonymous." She said, "Now, if you want to regain any of your sanity and begin to experience any serenity, then you're going to go to Al-Anon." Period. End of sentence. Not, "I hope you do." Or, "We encourage you to." Or, "It sure would be nice." Or, "Why don't you try 3 or 4 meetings?" She looked me dead in the eye and she said, "Big boy, if you want what we have, this is where you gotta go to get it. Period." And then she threw the real kicker in. She said, "And by the way, if you're going to be any kind of daddy at all, you're going to make sure those kids are introduced to Alateen." Yeah. God was taking care of us again. And you folks that have had any dealings with Alateen know that it's a spotty thing at best, isn't it? It ain't everywhere. But guess where the oldest, strongest Alateen group in the state of Alabama was at that time and still is today? Bessemer, Alabama. Already in place, sitting there waiting on our kids to get there. God taking care of us. Yeah. We survived Hell Week. Mama got out of treatment. And we went to that anniversary that I told you about. She was in there 38 days. And her very first night out of treatment, we were not allowed to go home. We have picked her up and we had instructions to go to the Bessemer AA group. And we were following instructions. And we got there and we met up with about 8 other carloads. And we had a convoy and we went 50 miles down the road. We don't do a lot of that anymore. Boy, that used to be fun doing that. Carloads of us in a convoy. We got back home that night, me and Shirley and 2 kids. And at midnight that night, we're sitting in the den floor, and we got a big sack of chocolate chip cookies. The kids had bought her a 2-pound bag of chocolate chip cookies because she hadn't had any while she was in treatment. We had a bag of chocolate chip cookies and a gallon of milk. And we sat there on the floor and we talked as a family about something called family recovery. We made a conscious decision as a family that night to give this thing called family recovery a try. And that decision has led us so far to being right here with you in Cartersville today. What a decision it has been. What a ride it's been. What a journey this has been, beyond my wildest expectations. Those folks that tell you if you sat down when you first got here and wrote what you wanted out of this thing, that you'd have missed it, they're right. I'd have missed it. I'd have missed it. Because, you see, I wouldn't have had Cartersville and Altoona Roundup on that list. Hell, I didn't even know about you. And I'd have missed you. So I'm glad that God took care of that instead of me. All I had to do was make the decision and implement the action. All I had to do was suit up and show up and put one foot in front of the other and go. And God has taken care of the rest. 7 months I floundered. My wife wasn't floundering for that 7 months. She was over there in the AA room, had her a sponsor, had her a big book, and she was growing spiritually, and she was getting better, and the gap between us was getting wider. Finally, after 7 months, I looked at her one night after I'd come home from another one of those meetings where there had been a big discussion, and I'm sure today that I caused that discussion. Because, you see, I had become an expert on this program, and I'd argue with you about it, and I didn't know anything. And I came home from another one of those meetings where it had been one of those miserable nights, and I looked at Shirley and I said, "What in the world are you doing? I see you smiling. I see you getting better. What are you doing?" And my wife shared with me about her sponsor, and she shared with me about her literature, and she shared with me about her conscious contact with God. And I went back to Bessemer the next night, and I made a commitment to Bessemer that night to be my home group. When the meeting was over, I asked Fran to be my sponsor, and Fran threw the monkey wrench in the whole thing. She said, "Bo, I'll sponsor you on one condition." And I said, "What's that?" She said, "That you go to work." I said, "Oh, yeah, go to work, yeah." She said, "Go to work meant being up front, chairing the meetings, picking the topics, running the show." Okay, yeah. All right, I'm an up front kind of guy. She said, "No, that's not what I'm talking about." She said, "I'm talking about going to work on you." I said, "Fran, how do I do that?" She said, "Bo, we got 12 steps to take care of that. And if you're ready tonight to make a conscious commitment to implement these 12 steps in your life on a daily basis, then I'm ready to take you by the hand and walk with you." Now, that's 13 and a half years ago, and she still does that today. She sponsors me as much by example today as she does by us sitting down in those hardcore sessions that we used to have to have. But she's always there, and she's always, always involved in my life in some way. Always, and Jim is too, since Jim became a part of that thing. So I had a sponsor, and I'm ready, and I'm off and running, but I'm still fighting God. Because, you see, I still got God sitting up there judging me and punishing me. And I couldn't turn my will and my life over to the care of somebody that was judging me and punishing me. And that was when my AA buddy Jim, my AA sponsor Jim, took me into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, into the chapter to the agnostic. And that's where I found the God that I have today. Right in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the chapter to the agnostic. And it's a God of infinite power and of infinite love. And I know today that God is too busy loving me and forgiving me to even have time to judge me and punish me. And I keep God real busy today loving me and forgiving me. Yeah, a God of infinite power, never-ending power, never-ending love. And that's the God I have in my life today. And once I got that God in place, then good things began to happen in my life, and I began to grow spiritually. Now, it's not all been the broad highway. We still have our living problems. Life goes on. And, you know, as I look back and as I realize, nowhere are we ever guaranteed that the problems will go away. We're guaranteed that we'll be able to handle those problems, that we'll have everything we need to take care of those problems. And some of the problems that have happened in our life, I would have never thought that I could have walked through some of those problems. And I guess, no, I don't guess, by far the biggest one is the death of our son. Most of y'all in this room know about the death of our son. We're 5.5 years in this program when Mike, who was 20 years old at the time, was killed by a drunk driver. And if you had asked me on that Tuesday morning, "Bo, could you handle the death of your son, and especially in it happening that way? And I would have looked at you and I would have told you, no, I couldn't handle that. You know, I would have been telling you the truth. The great news is that I haven't had to handle it. You see, we've handled it. We haven't handled it yet, but we're handling it. We're handling it. And that's the way this program has been for us, is it's been a we deal. I have not had to do anything. You have always been there right when I needed you there. I guess probably one of the most important things that I ever did in this recovery program was to finally make that decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Because you see, I was hung up in that third step and I couldn't get into 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 until I had that squared away. And boy, I remember getting up one Wednesday morning and I walked in the kitchen and I looked at Shirley and I said, you know, I don't want to go to work today. And Shirley said, well, you got a lot of time coming. Won't you take a day off? And I said, hell, I don't want to stay home. And Shirley looked at me and she said, well, what is it that you want to do? And I said, the best I can figure, I want to get away from me. Because you see, I was fighting God. And that's a fight that I ain't never going to win. Okay? And God loves me enough today that he will allow me to do that. He'll allow me to get just as miserable as I have to get. He gives me a free will and allows me to do that. And Shirley knew that she couldn't help me escape from me. She knew that. I finally decided to not go on to work. I could be miserable there and get paid for it. And I started to work, and it was a Wednesday morning. And about 8:05 that Wednesday morning, I pulled my truck out of traffic there in Bessemer because I couldn't go any further. And I sat there on the side of that road at 8:05 on that Wednesday morning, and I beat on the steering wheel and I hollered at God. And I said what I know today was my version of the third step prayer. Because what I said was, God, I don't know what I got that you want. God, I don't know what I got that you can use. And God, I don't know where we're going to go to do it, where we're going to end up, or what we're going to end up doing. But whatever it is and wherever we got to go, let's get on with it, God. Because I can't fight you anymore. I'm tired, and I just can't fight you anymore. And I put my truck in gear and I went to work. Now, nothing special happened that day. I never saw the flash of light. I never saw the burning bush. But when I got home, my wife looked at me when I came in the door and she looked at me and she said, what happened to you today? And I had said nothing to her. I had said nothing to anybody. I said, what are you talking about? What happened to me? She said, you look different. I said, how do I look different? She said, you're not tired. You're not worn out. You're not ready to just flop in a chair. And from that point on, good things began to come my way. And what I want to do for about 2 or 3 minutes is share with you a few of those good things that have come my way since I made that decision that morning. What I know today is that on the side of that road that morning at 8:05, here's what happened. I fired Bo as the general manager of Bo's Life. Yeah. And I looked around and I hired a new general manager, and that new general manager is God. Now, the biggest deal that I have today in recovery, I'm telling you, the biggest deal I have today is keeping Bo fired and God hires. That's it. And as long as I can keep it in that sequence, keep Bo fired and God hired, this thing runs pretty good. It really does. And it's when I take back over that it gets in the ditch. But remember, we've got a free will, and God will allow us to do that. But God loves me enough that he never moves away from me. He's right there. And whenever I'm ready to quit running it in the ditch, he's ready to take it right back over one more time. Here's some of the things that have come my way since I made that decision and I fired me and I hired God. The first thing I share with you that this program's given me is it's given me freedom. Freedom from that anger, those resentments, that guilt, the shame, that embarrassment, that self-pity. All these things still crop back up in my life. They crop back up in the form of daily living problems. What I have today is the freedom of choice of whether I allow them to stay and consume me or whether I get with you and we get with God and we do something about them. The next thing I share with you that this program's given me is it's given me hope. And I think that's our message anyhow, isn't it? That light at the end of the tunnel. It ain't as good as it's going to be, but it's a darn sight better than it was. The next thing I share with you that this program's given me is you gave me that new concept of God that I've already talked to you about. I got that right here in the doors of AA and Al-Anon. That new concept of God that's alive and working in my life today. The next thing I share with you that this program gave me is you gave me back to me. Because when I got here, I didn't know who I was and I didn't know what I was. And the longer I stay around you guys and gals, the better handle I'm getting on who I am and what I am. But more importantly, here lately, I'm beginning to get a pretty good handle on what I am not. And that's been fun for me. Because you see, there was a time in my life, and I bet you there was a time in your life, that you had to be all things to all people and had to have all the answers to all the questions. And it's just not that way anymore. And I'm getting more and more comfortable every day saying, I don't know. But I got a world full of people around me. Let's go find out. Let's go get the real answer. And so that's been a new experience for me, is learning what I am not. And the last thing I share with you that this program has given me has been by far the most important thing. That is, this program gave me you. It gave me you. Because as I've already shared with you, that time came, May 17th, 1988, that our lives changed, and that was the day that our 20-year-old son was killed by that drunk driver. And I would have told you that Tuesday morning, because he was killed on a Tuesday night at 9 o'clock or right around 9. And I would have told you any time during that day I couldn't handle that. I would not be able to walk through that. And that would have been the truth. Because you see, I wasn't capable of doing it. We weren't capable of doing it, but you were there. You were there. Within 45 minutes of us getting the news of Mike's death, AA and Al-Anon was in our home. And you did something different than the rest of the folks. The rest of the family came, got tired. They were involved in their own grief. They got tired and they had to go home and rest. The church came, yeah, Southern Baptist Church showed up. Fried chicken, tater salad, yeah. And they brought the food and they stayed for a few minutes and they left. AA and Al-Anon came and you stayed. Thank God, you stayed. You came in the door and you looked us in the eye. And you said, we don't know either. We ain't got no more idea what the answer to this thing is than you do. And we didn't come in here to try to explain this deal to you. We came in here because we got open arms and we got soft shoulders and we got big hearts. And we came over here to put our arms around you and love you and to be with you and walk through this pain with you. And you did that. Now, when I'm talking about you stayed, folks, I'm talking about 24 hours a day. You just moved in and you stayed. And you made the decisions. And you did the things that had to be done. Mike, like I told you, was killed on Tuesday night. Wednesday night, in our front yard, 15 or 16 Alateens in a circle of love, sitting out there Indian-legged with their arms around each other's shoulders, with Sissy in the center of that circle of love. And I don't know anywhere on the face of the earth you get unconditional love like that, except in rooms like this, full of folks just like us. Just how powerful is this way of life? My little old mind is not capable of comprehending the power in rooms like this, full of folks just like us. I know this much. There's a real live alcoholic sitting right there that walked through the pain of losing their son that way, and she did not have to take a drink. And I suggest to you that that's powerful. Because what I know about the disease of alcoholism today says that she was supposed to drink. And she didn't have to drink. And that's powerful stuff. There's a real live Al-Anon standing in front of you today that didn't have to take the shotgun and don't go do something totally insane to a drunk driver. And I had it planned. Had it planned in detail. But you were there. And it was an AA that recognized the change in me and saw the anger in me and pulled me in a room and shut the door and confronted me about it. It made me talk through it and made me see the insanity of it. And I didn't have to do it. I didn't have to do it. God, I thank you for that. I thank you for that. I'm going to share a couple of things with you about Mike. Because I want you to know what kind of son I had. Last time I saw him live was Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock. He's going to work. 20 years, 6 months old. He taps me on the shoulder and says, I'm going to work, Dad. Takes about 3 steps toward the front door, turns around in the middle of that den, looks me dead in the eye. He said, I love you, Dad. And out the door he went. Last words I heard my son speak was, I love you, Dad. That ain't a bad deal, is it? That ain't a bad deal. And I'm here today to thank you for that because you taught us how to live that way. By golly, when we got here, we wasn't living that way. You also need to know that that morning wasn't special. We did that most mornings. Buried Mike on Friday. Saturday morning, me and Shirley go up to the hospital to see the good-looking little thing that was in the car with him. Of course there was a good-looking little thing in the car with him. He always had a good-looking thing with him. And we go up there. She was injured in the wreck. We go up there and we visited with her for a little bit. We got ready to leave. And as we got ready to walk out the door, she said, I'm going to tell you something before you leave. She said, something you need to know. She said, Tuesday night, Mike did everything he could to avoid the wreck. Mike did everything he could to keep us from getting hit, and there was nowhere for him to go. There was just nothing he could do. And at the last minute, when it was inevitable, we knew we were going to get hit. She said, Mike, at the last second, turned loose of the steering wheel, threw himself across me, and said, hold on. And Mike took the lick. Now, when she told me that, I couldn't handle that. And I just shoved it. God gives us a place back here that we shove things that we can't handle. And it went back there. And it was some 3 months later, and it creeped back out. And I, Shirley and I were talking, and I said, is that really what she said that morning? And Shirley said, Bo, I assure you that's what she said that morning. And I started chuckling. And Shirley said, what are you chuckling about? I said, well, my God, that don't surprise me a bit. Mike left this life the way he lived this life, giving to others. Giving to others. And I'm here today to thank you for that, because you taught us how to live that way. And that ain't a bad way to live. That ain't a bad way to do it. So I got to close. Here's what I want to tell you. Is that we're still walking through some of that pain. It's not over yet. I've got a funny feeling it ain't never going to be totally over. It's another reason that we need to be here, and we need to be with you, and we need to make sure that you are part of our lives, because you are the ones that carry us through that. We don't know how to handle that. We just know that we got to have you, and we got to have your love, and you're always there for us. The other thing I want to share with you, just a little bit of good news about some things currently. This past February, I kept talking about two kids. Sissy got involved in Alateen. She stayed in Alateen from 13 to 20. Then she came into Al-Anon. She's 27 years old now, with 14 years of 12-step recovery. Alateen and Al-Anon. This past February, I got to walk her down the aisle. I got to give her away to a guy that loves her. Says he's going to cherish her, love her, and cherish her, and take care of her the rest of her life. And I got to thank y'all for him, because guess where he came from? Right out of the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. 5 years of dynamite, big book sobriety. Bob had been married before. Two kids in that previous marriage. So I walked a daughter down the aisle February the 17th. And I became a father-in-law, and I became a grandfather. All right there in one night. As Shirley will tell you, we got two grandkids and no diapers to change. And it's all a product of here, rooms like this, folks just like you. Every good thing that we have in our life today is coming through rooms like this from folks just like you. That's where it comes from. A couple of months ago, I don't know how to be sick. I had that little old attack. It was a gallbladder attack. We were coming home from one of these things. I had to have an operation. Scared me to death, literally scared me to death, because I don't know about operations and I don't know how to be sick. Just so happens my personal doctor is also the leading surgeon in our city. So my personal doctor was the one that did the surgery. He also happens to be a recovering member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So you see, God had it in place, had everything in place. One of the oldest members of our Al-Anon group is a volunteer there at the hospital. She does not volunteer on Tuesday, and that's the day my surgery was, but guess who was there Tuesday morning with her volunteer outfit on? And Margaret walked all the way into the operating room with me, held my hand until they put me to sleep. And when I got to the recovery room, the first voice that I could identify was Margaret. She was standing there holding my hand. So you see, you were right there with me. And I don't doubt that anymore. I know that when the time comes, you're going to be there. I know that. My job is just to suit up, show up, and be here so that we make this a team deal. There are times in my life that I will be strong. And maybe I can be strong for you. There are times in my life that I'm going to be weak, and I know that you will be strong for me. So I hope if I haven't convinced you of anything else today, I've convinced you of just how important you are to me, how vital a part you are in this thing. And if you've got any inkling of just how important you are to me, then I'm going to close by making this deal with you. And some of you in this room, I've made this deal, and you know that it works. And here's the deal. I'm going to keep coming back. The room's like this, full of folks just like you. Your part of the deal is I want you to keep coming back. The room's like this, full of folks just like us. If I keep coming back, and you keep coming back, then maybe, just maybe, someday, somewhere, our paths will cross again as we trudge this road of a happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.